This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
Welcome. Welcome all.
Yeah. So great to be back, everyone.
And the people that are back are Gabrielle Urbina,
Zach Valenti,
and Sarah Shackett.
And we actually have a newcomer here at Bad Ideas HQ.
Hell yeah.
A wild Mike Schubert appeared.
What's the noise for? Like,
Kazap, you're right there in the chair now.
Hello, how's it going?
Everything's going so good, Mike.
Yeah.
For anyone that is not lucky enough to already have Mike Schubert in their life, and we're about to correct that grievous oversight, Mike is an amazing host and podcast creator. He currently runs two podcasts. This is all just a tiny footnote compared to his real achievement, which is that he was an actor in Time Bombs, show that me, Zach, and Sarah produced.
That was so fun.
Oh, no,
it was
amazing.
So great to have you there. Oh, man.
It was like my first week in New York. It was perfect.
But no, Mike runs Potterless. He's also got a new show, right?
Yeah, Horse. So Potterless is where I'd never read the Harry Potter books as a kid. It's me reading them for the first time as an adult. All the people in this room with me have been guests on it. It's been very fun. But yeah, my newer show, Horse, is a basketball podcast about everything except for the actual sport. So it's just all the silly aspects of the NBA, like Twitter beefs, player drama, trades, which it is trade season right now. The trade deadline is tomorrow at the
how
time of
doing?
Recording. I've overcome the Knicks trade of my favorite player. I went through the seven stages of grief without knowing what they were. I saw like a meme of it afterwards and I was like, oh, I did those all. But now I'm doing better. But yeah, so Horse is super fun. It's me and Eric Silver just talking about very silly basketball stuff in an effort to prove to everyone, or in an effort to prove that you don't just have to be like a sports bro meathead to enjoy basketball.
Right.
It's as entertaining as watching like Game of Thrones, but instead of your favorite characters dying, they just get traded. So that's okay. They're still alive.
Although sometimes that hurts more than a character dying.
Because then you see them. You see Kristaps Porzingis in a Mavs jersey, and you're like, no, it's not right. But it's all good.
Come back to me.
Nah, I feel happy with our new teammates and stuff. I'm looking forward to next year. But yeah, that's
excellent.
Me.
Excellent. All right. So before we dive into the business at hand, for anyone who is brand new to the show, I guess we should take a moment to just
explain what this is and how we know bad ideas.
Sure, that.
So here's how we know bad ideas.
No, or no with a K and O W? Or is this a sweet double entendre?
Great visual wordplay on a podcast.
This is the fear of public shame difference. So every week, one of us brings to the other members of this table something that is a bad idea. Sometimes it's an article, sometimes it's a Craigslist post, sometimes it's a post from the depths of Reddit. But whatever it is, it's something that makes you go, whoa, boy, somebody had a bad idea. Somebody really just like came up with something that was highly inadvisable. And then the other people who have never heard the idea before it's said on the air and are usually deeply horrified have 30 minutes to discuss how they're going to turn that wretched aberration into a good story.
And this week...
It's grim.
Yeah, oh, the ear-to-ear smile has me very terrified.
I found a pretty good dumb idea. From, I guess, one of the party's perspectives, from the other, quite
quite smart.
Oh boy!
All right. All right.
And what is the
from
source?
Where does this idea come?
So this week it is from the bowels of Reddit.
But
actually, it is via the bowels of Reddit. It's actually originally published in the Seattle Times.
Oh, hey! All right. And I used to live there.
Aw. Well, maybe you'll know the defendant in the case where the sheriff's use of courtroom camera to view juror's notebook, lawyer's notes, sparks dismissal of criminal case.
No.
What?
Charges were thrown out in a San Juan assault case after it was revealed that the county sheriff had been using the court security camera to focus on defense notes and a juror's notebook. I can't wait for what you come up with this.
Whoa.
Is there more to this? Or this
there is more
okay.
to this.
Okay.
Some defense attorneys in San Juan County worry that Sheriff Ron Krebs has a finger on the scales of justice after learning he used a courtroom security camera to surreptitiously zoom in on defense documents and a juror's notebook during a criminal trial last week. I can see him in the booth going, enhance.
That's what I was going to say. It's the ultimate CSI enhance.
The incident has drawn outrage. No, don't give me an ad for a yoga mat sled. Go away.
I'm going to include this in the bad idea. That
yeah, yoga mat sled. That's the bad idea.
I'm just going to start from the beginning of the paragraph.
No. Sure.
Some defense attorneys in San Juan County worry that Sheriff Rob Krebs has a finger on the scales of justice after learning he used a courtroom security camera to surreptitiously zoom in on defense documents and a juror's notebook during a criminal trial last week.
Cool.
Oh, no.
Cool
and well.
Yep.
The incident has drawn outrage from criminal and civil rights attorneys and frustration from the country, from the county prosecutor, and prompted a rare weekend hearing during which a judge dismissed misdemeanor assault and trespass charges against Lopez Island man after finding the incident amounted to government misconduct that had violated his right to a fair trial. I'm flabbergasted, said San Juan public defender
yes.
Colleen Kenneman,
yes.
The attorney whose notes were targeted. By the way, if you want a note link for this, we're going to put it in the notes. This is a court of law. You're supposed to be safe there, and the proceedings are supposed to be fair. Here, the sheriff used the courtroom to violate my client's rights. Outrageous hardly covers it. Kenneman isn't alone. San Juan County Prosecutor Randall Gaylord, whose office has been stung by misconduct in the sheriff's office before, distanced himself from Krebs. I, too, am frustrated at what has happened here, frustrated that it has happened to cases I personally was involved in and concerned about the community we represent. Gaylord said only the sheriff knows exactly what he was doing and why. We're independently elected officials, he said. Gaylord said no one in his office received information from the sheriff, from the video in this case, or any other. We would not do that, he said. We have no knowledge of anything like that. In court filings, Krebs and Gaylord insisted the incident was isolated and unintentional. Sure. And resulted from security concerns about
really
the defendant in the
sure
case.
Sure isn't a lower font in the article.
It's not in the article. That's editorial. But also, really? You think they did this just once?
Accidental.
Oh, I just happened to put the security tape and then zoom in just on the notebook.
Enhance.
I thought I was talking to Alexa.
I just kept tripping into my laptop and catching the weird scenes.
So they're insisting that the incident was isolated and it resulted from security concerns about the defendant in the case, who allegedly had threatened to stab a Lopez Island grocer.
Okay.
Alrighty. We were just making sure he wasn't going to stab anyone in court.
In
while
the
he
middle
was,
of the
yeah,
courtroom.
I wanted to That's make sure dumb. He didn't write, I'm going to stab someone in my notes.
Yeah. Krebs, in a sworn declaration, said he inadvertently manipulated the camera in
wow.
the district courtroom in such a way that it zoomed in on one or more locations in the courtroom and insisted he didn't read or pass on anything he may have seen. He claimed that he didn't know the camera had a zoom function.
Sure.
Telephone and email messages seeking comment from Krebs were not returned. Krebs, according to testimony and the documents, was manipulating the camera from the sheriff's dispatch office. Video from the surveillance camera was renewed during a hearing Friday and Saturday by County Superior Court Judge Donald Eaton and then sealed despite efforts by San Juan civil rights lawyer Nick Power to have made it public. Gaylord opposes releasing the video, saying that could expose weaknesses in the court's security. Eaton has a hearing set for February 12th on whether to release the video. In the next several days, he is also expected to issue formal findings regarding his dismissal of the case. Screenshots from the video provided by Power that show close-ups of a trial exhibit, a steno book belonging to number three juror in the case, and a legal pad belonging to Kennemond were introduced as evidence at the hearing and played into Eaton's decision to dismiss the charges with prejudice, meaning they cannot be refiled. Eaton has not yet issued written findings in connection with the dismissal. Kennemond was representing Lopez Island resident Dustin Schibel. I'm sorry if I'm butchering all these names. In what was, by all accounts, a routine low-level misdemeanor criminal trial before a district court jury when the misconduct was revealed. It wasn't even a big case, it sounds like. Power said Monday, the only thing that unusual was the case was being heard by Eaton, a retired jurist who was filling in while District Judge Catherine Loring worked on another matter. If that hadn't been the case, Kennemond said the whole incident likely would have gone unnoticed. And that might be the most frightening thing of all, she said. It was Loring who first realized something was amiss on Thursday, according to court filings. Loring said she was reviewing a calendar at the desk of Jane Severin, the court administrator, mm-hmm. who has two computer monitors, one for work and the other showing views from security cameras and outside the courthouse. According to court documents, Loring said her attention was drawn to movement of one of the normally stationary cameras.
Oh,
a closer look revealed that the camera located above the jury box in the district court and that it was panning and tilting and zooming in on the jury box and counsel tables.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Wow. Concerned, Severin, at Loring's request, approached Eaton at a break in the case Friday. Eaton then informed Kennemond and prosecutor Gaylord. Eaton reviewed the video, then sequestered the jury Friday and began a hearing on the matter, which included testimony from Loring and Severin, as well as the county's technology experts and Krebs. Afterward, Eaton dismissed the charges, citing government misconduct over the camera zooming.
Yeah, no shit.
Mm-hmm. Zooming in on Kenneman's legal pad. It is the Jesus second case Christ. The San Juan prosecutor's office has lost due to misconduct in the sheriff's office in recent years. In 2016, Eaton, then sitting as a superior court judge, threw out the felony conviction of a high school teacher accused of having sex with a student after it was revealed that the sheriff's detective on the case was having sex with the victim and had lied.
Wow.
This whole department.
Shut it down.
This is a lot of bad ideas for one department.
This is a lot.
Power, in filings seeking to make the courtroom video public, said the hearing raised still unanswered questions, including why the camera in the district courtroom has Zoom capabilities at all. or whether the cameras can be controlled remotely from other county terminals. The security cameras in the other courtrooms and elsewhere inside the courthouse do not have Zoom, tilt, or pan capabilities, according to the documents. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you.
Wow. My goodness.
Timer set.
So the most important question, let's get this out of the way. What is a better title for the movie? Isolated and accidental, or enhance.
I think isolated and accidental.
Like accidental.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have
a couple ideas, but I want to hear yours.
I have two pitches on how to spin this.
Mm-hmm.
So the first, I think, is the more straightforward. That is just like the conspiracy courtroom thriller.
Sure, runaway jury.
Kind of like you have like the young up and coming defense attorney that, like, if we were making this movie in like 1990, would probably be played by like Jodie Foster or someone like that.
Yeah, Tom Hanks.
Yeah, exactly. That is just like slowly noticing that there are these like bugs working against them and sort of like, you know, starting to be like, am I just being paranoid? Wait a minute. No, there really is something here, but how can I prove it? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how deep does it go?
Sure.
The other pitch that I have, and this is admittedly like the weird one, is just like you throw out everything except this idea of like one side of the court having an unfair advantage over the other. And you sort of do something that is like the world's worst lawyer suddenly like develops the ability to read minds. And he's like, oh man, like now I've got them. Like now I'm going to be able to win every case. But he's such a bad lawyer that even with like the mind reading advantage, he still like keeps losing cases.
And I imagine people in courtrooms have a lot on their minds that are not
right,
the case.
Exactly. And then it's almost kind of like the Groundhog's Day-esque, like this person just being caught in this cycle of always losing trials and having to like figure out how to become a better lawyer aside from his like unfair like
unfair
mental
advantage.
Surveillance. Those are my two like immediate like ways to spin this terrible idea that this horrible person had into anything approaching a good story.
What stuck out to me was the scene of like someone going to look at being outside of a courtroom and looking at monitors like of the courtroom and suddenly seeing things move. And like, I think there's maybe not a full film, but like a really cool episode of television or a short, like if Law and Order would want to do this, of like trying to solve a crime, but you're not allowed in the room. You just have like the pan and zoom capabilities of the shitty courtroom cameras.
Interesting.
And like trying to figure out like maybe there's a murderer in the courtroom and you're trying to like scan the benches and see like where they are and having to work on monitors and not being able to enter the space.
My first thought was, I didn't actually see this movie, I just saw the trailers. Was it called Michael Clayton, where it was like everyone has a different perspective on an assassination and then they all have to like get together? It was like a George Clooney movie.
Michael Clayton is a George Clooney movie.
Yeah, that is.
Okay.
And there is a little bit of that like, you see things from one angle and then you come back to them from another angle.
No, there is a movie.
It's a different movie where it's like someone gets assassinated, but like everyone has an obstructed view, but then they all have to like talk about it together to piece it together.
Eagle Eye, but it's something.
Okay.
No, I know the one you're talking about. And isn't Jack from Lost in that movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I never actually saw it. I just know it exists. But my thought was just on this report, it just seems like everyone except for the sheriff hates the sheriff. Everyone was like, this person said the sheriff sucks. This person said the sheriff sucks. Imagine like everyone bringing something to the table to like find out how it went wrong. So like someone, one of the jurors who like wrote something in the notebook, like maybe he like doodled the sheriff like with a silly hairdo. And the next day it's like, and then the next day the sheriff had a different haircut. Like, how would he have known that I made fun of his hair to juror number four? Just like all these like little things of like, that didn't make sense. That didn't make sense. And someone's like, I thought I heard something. And like, it's all little people, little pieces together to get towards the crime until ultimately the person's like, I saw the camera move.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, I just had this thought of like, if this sheriff got assassinated, it would be like the Clue mystery. Like everyone would be a suspect. Mm. Like, you know, just like everyone had
the prosecutor wants him gone. The civil rights attorneys want him gone.
And then imagine being the new sheriff that has to come in and like figure that
out. Solve the sheriff's murder.
Oh man. There's so many ways to take this.
Yeah, this is a lot, guys.
My sort of question for, let's just kind of arbitrarily give ourselves a boundary and to like get going. Do we want to try serious or funny? Like, I think that just kind of like choosing, like, are we trying to make this
like sort of thriller or horror feel versus like X being like, whoops, I tripped on the controller.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, like, does this movie star young Jodie Whittaker? Not Jodie Whittaker, Jodie Foster. Or does it
Jodie
star
well.
Rowan Atkinson?
Right.
Rowan Atkinson goes to court.
I feel like this story is so absurd that it would be more fun for us to make a serious story.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just because I think that this story is so silly and obnoxious that I feel like the experiment of us trying to take this pile of shit and make it into something actually captivating.
Like, it's such a like cartoonally evil move.
Yeah. Right. And just also like so simple because it's such a small crime. Mm-hmm. It's like you did not need, none of this was necessary. It's arbitrarily evil.
And yeah. I just love the detail that the person who found it was like, just happened to be working on another matter.
Yeah. And looking at the right calendar on the right desk at the right time.
Yeah.
Right. At the right desk with the right computer with two monitors. So there's somebody whose permanent setup is that camera view. And so like, are they like sitting there all day, like taking notes to just like, you know, deliver actual, like, you know, this
probably
is just
not,
like their twisted vision of justice, like by spying on both sides and just like seeing which one is telling the truth.
To be fair, like, I remember, like, when I worked retail, like, I had, like, at, like, the register, I had, like, the computer screen that was, like, the retail system, and then there were, like, some camera feeds from, like, behind the store. Somebody could have been, like, I don't know, like, smuggling a panda bear on one of those feeds, and, like, I would have maybe not noticed, because after a while, you just, like, glaze that out if you're, like, standing at that position, like, all day long. Which is actually a huge problem with those kinds of systems, because people are just like, oh, it's handled. Somebody's watching. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of are like mentally editing it out.
The line of the guy saying that he didn't know the camera had a zoom feature is really
so
funny.
Yeah.
Also the fact that they're like no other camera has the zoom feature. So I feel like if we do...
There's a story of an enterprising camera salesman.
And then, like, somehow he's the hero because, like, maybe there actually is something that goes wrong in the courthouse. And then what ultimately allows them to solve the crime is that some guy who knows about cameras is like, oh, yeah, that's the model, blah, 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 like X3005. That's one of the few that has zoom. And everyone's like, it has zoom?
Yeah.
And then, like, Zoom Enhance lets them solve the crime rather than it be used to spy on a doodle pad.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, if this is going to be serious, I think it has to be, one, like, a more serious setup. Like... you know, probably instead of just sort of minor misdemeanors, like a big white collar financial crimes trial or some, or, you know, a murder trial or something like that. And yeah, we probably want to, if we're going to be playing with like cameras as sort of a thing that moves the plot along, maybe they are not like the evil thing that's happening. Maybe they are a tool in our, whoever our heroes, young Jodie Foster's kit.
I also like the whole concept of like, they're basically having a trial because of this trial being botched.
Yeah.
So, and the sheriff still should be the bad guy. But I think he should do something more dastardly. So what if there's a situation where he like somehow in the courtroom of like a normal trial, either a key witness or a prosecutor, someone was poisoned or something, and they like die in the courtroom. And then the whole thing is trying to figure out who did it. And then it's like they have to have a trial and everyone who was in the courtroom has to be there. But then they have like, but now they're all on trial to figure out who killed whoever. And then the ultimate thing at the very end is that they found out the camera zoom, they zoom in, and then they see that the sheriff like slipped cyanide in the water that he said he was getting from the hallway or something.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that a lot too.
So who would be the person that would get, like, who would be the person that would get murdered?
Right. It has to be like, I've thankfully never been on trial, so I don't know. Like, I would say probably you would want to murder a key witness, but then I think the sheriff has to be the defendant, or no, the sheriff can still be the prosecutor.
Yeah,
it's just the witness. It can somehow they find out that the witness is going to like get the defendant off on the alibi, so then the sheriff is going to kill that witness while they're on stand. Or before they take the stand.
Or right before they take the stand.
So that they can't deliver the alibi. They're the only person that knows the alibi. They're going to say it. But then when they ask for a glass of water, he drops some poison in it.
And it's one of those, like, the defense has, like, pulled this rabbit out of their hat. Like,
last witness.
No, like, this is, you know.
It's the My Cousin Vinny, like, we figured out this tiny little thing.
Right.
And probably like the sheriff had like in their own investigation kind of pieced that together and been like, we're just gonna pretend that nobody knows this, we're just gonna act like we never noticed.
The sheriff finds it out and then purposely hides the evidence, and then they find out that the defense figured it out on their own. Shit, I gotta stop this. Mm. So then he murders the witness.
Right.
In the courtroom and makes it look like a medical emergency or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. But then they're the person that's in charge of like,
right.
Well, wait, we're going to find this murderer. Like nobody's leaving until we know who did this.
Even more dastardly.
Right.
I love it. No. And then the defense has to like convince the judge of like, no. There's foul play here. We need like an outside. We need someone from the other county to come in and look at this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's how they found out something about like, oh, our cameras don't zoom or whatever. But also, yeah. I love that the jurors in trial one now become witnesses in trial two. And there's new jurors.
Right. Also, well, and there probably wouldn't be a trial until they've like actually arrested someone.
Okay. And arraigned.
So I feel that we may be more in a situation where like civil United States trial turns more into like kangaroo court trial we're not going anywhere. Like, you know, like seal the doors. Yeah. Like, you know, nobody's leaving this room until we.
And then you're in a 12 Angry Men place of like, there's probably someone, maybe the sheriff, who's being like, was clearly a medical thing. There's no reason for any of us to be here. I want to leave. You want to leave. There's a Seahawks game tonight. We all have places to be.
And the young, plucky defense attorney is the one that is sort of being like, no. Justice will be served.
Right.
You know.
Meanwhile, overhead.
The eye in the sky.
Right. I think that for this to really work, then whoever this like surprise witness that gets murdered, they can't be like, you know, Sister Maria, the kindly nun that everyone in town absolutely loved. Nah. It needs to be like, you know,
Mundungus Fletcher all the way.
it's just random bystander that happens to know this one tiny detail.
Right.
And they found this person because of some obscure news interview. Like the local news happened to be talking to people about this ongoing case.
Mm-hmm.
And then offhandedly, this person said one thing in the sentence that they said to the reporter. And they were and the defense was watching that news report and was like, he said this thing, and then
that means
flips around their corkboard with all the yarn on it. It's like,
Alternatively, if this is like a small town, like where was the small town in the article? Like where was it originally? San Juan, was it?
Yeah, which is an island off of the coast of Seattle. Like the San Juan Islands are very tiny. So this is definitely a small town vibe, not like small town ho-dunk little,
right.
it's not my cousin's mini town, but it is, you know, not a lot of people in the town. Everyone would be knowing that this thing is going on.
And presumably multiple people might maybe know whoever the surprise witness is. And it could be like, wait a minute, like, you know, John, wasn't that the guy that like trashed your pizzeria last year? And like the reason you have to like go out of business, or then like, you know, like, hang on a second. Like, you know, Judy, wasn't this the person that like did this mean thing to you?
Right.
Just because there needs to be, I think, like some tension of like multiple people could theoretically be more immediately appealing.
Yes, as suspects. Perpetrators. Yeah.
For a moment, I forgot the S word. It's like,
no, I like it. It's fun. Okay.
Yeah. So this can sort of be like everyone kind of knows why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a key witness who is a slightly suspect.
good title for the movie. Suspect.
Ooh. Ooh, yeah. I still like Enhance.
Okay. 15 minutes.
Oh God. We have so much time. So this person dies in the courtroom. The courtroom is like sealed. And then I guess the sheriff takes over and like tries to control it, and it's our defense attorney protagonist who is trying to like do what, basically. I'm just trying to wrap my head around like what is like the initial conflict before we like go to the tape.
I think probably what is going to go down is that in a situation where this is such a small town that they want to just figure out who did it and not let anyone leave, kind of thing.
Yeah.
the sheriff's going to try to run the show and just start like interrogating people. Mm-hmm, and that's what mm-hmm. he wants to do, because if he's never interrogated and he's always doing the interrogating,
right.
then there's no chance of him to look bad. And he yeah. just wants to make someone look bad. It's like playing a game of mafia. Like, he just wants one person to look bad, and then we can all point to them and then put them in trouble. And I think that Jodie Foster, who is 100% cast in this film, Jodie Foster wants them to go through the proper legal proceedings yeah. and treat it more right. like a trial, whereas the sheriff is trying to make it more of a kangaroo court and make it more frantic so that they can't do the due diligence and the proper justice that it yeah. needs
right.
because then they'll find out that he did it.
Or, and I think like the yes and to that is that I think the first step in the sheriff's plan post-murder, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
step
right,
one, right, right. step yeah. one, step murder, murder. Done. Clutch.
Also a good title for something.
Step I think that like step two would actually be like jurors, lawyer, everyone that isn't a cop, get out of here. Like, you know, like, because we want to run forensics. We want to, you know, kind of like get like the scene on lockdown.
And yeah. Everyone point, gets sequestered.
Yeah. And at that point, once like everyone is gone, it would be very easy to kind of be like, oh, what's this? We found like flour in his back pocket. Flour, like the one that John the Baker uses. Bam. Case closed. Hashtag sheriffed. But then the like, young defense attorney might sort of be the one that is kind of going like, no, what are you talking about? Like the moment that like everyone leaves, like the integrity of the scene is going to be destroyed. And, you know, like they might be like taking out, the environment might be changing. People might be coming in, coming out. We need to like keep this on lockdown until we have like a working theory. Mm-hmm. And so then the sheriff needs to kind of improvise a sort of a new plan on the go. And it's sort of this like, rather than the very controlled, careful setup that he was expecting, he then kind of needs to like do the plan on the fly.
Right.
Sure. Of like trying to sequester people as best as he can in the room.
Yeah.
And like set up an interrogation center where the stand is. And like work it that way. And you have the defense attorney like basically doing cross-examination while he's trying to do that.
Yeah.
I also really enjoy the reveal of figuring out the camera being like a very mundane thing. Like they were whoever ends up being the camera repairman or specialist
yeah.
just comes in because he was scheduled to do a monthly maintenance on the camera on the first Tuesday of every month. And he comes in and says something about the model number. Like he has no idea how hectic the situation is. And he's just here to check out on the camera repair. And he very offhandedly says like, oh, you guys have like the T3000X? That's crazy.
That's kind of unusual.
That's unusual. Like, why would
that's
you need
really nice for a courtroom?
Yeah, exactly. He says something very offhand. Like, why would you need a camera with zoom in a courtroom? Huh? Well, everything looks good to me. He leaves, and then the defense attorney's like,
wait a minute.
And then they go to the tapes, and then they like. Then at that point, they use the tapes to enhance,
right.
which of course the titular line of the movie is said when they see the cyanide pill slipped into water whatever.
Yeah.
And then that's how they bring the sheriff down. And of course he's very anti-camera because he knows he's screwed.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sure he didn't realize that it was there.
Oh yeah. He had no idea that the camera could zoom or enhance.
He didn't know that it could zoom.
Okay. Or is it that he was using the camera to spy? And that is how he knew ahead of time that the defense had this like surprise witness. And that is how
it should
he
be
got,
one
like,
or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we can do both.
Right.
And I don't have a strong preference either way.
Zach, what do you think?
I mean, I don't know how much skin to put in this game. I think my job is to just enjoy the chaos. But,
nice work.
Personally, if you're just asking for my opinion, there's just something so sinister about the like using a camera in a courtroom just seems like such a fundamental violation of the whole thing. But that being said, it's like you have a story right now that works the other way.
Yeah. So no, but I think the zoom thing, I think the way that we do it, and this does make it more serious where it's less like, oh, well, the camera. I think if he did use the camera to figure out that this witness was going to bring it home, then go through his evil deed. I like if somehow he says something in the heat of the moment that the defense attorney wrote in her notebook.
Mm.
And then he says something that she's like, wait, I never said that out loud.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Right.
And then that is how she knows that he used the camera. And that's how she knows that the camera can zoom. And thus she uses the camera zoom feature, like, or goes back to the tapes knowing right. that it has more capabilities, and then like looks at the tapes to try to see.
And yeah, she can sort of like put two feeds mm-hmm. together and mm-hmm. between the two of them work out what
that's
happens. Yeah,
that's tight.
Yeah, I dig yeah. that.
I think and I mean a lot. And like, you know what's fun is that at that point all of a sudden, like, you're kind of an even more of a Hitchcock movie than you were yeah. previously, because until that point, there's probably been a lot of talk about like the sheriff kind of going like, look, like I put my, like I, you have it on my good word that you will not be harmed. Mm. Like nobody else in this room is armed. I'm the only person that has like a gun. Like, you know, I'm here to guarantee your safety. And then the defense attorney's kind of just like, oh shit. Like, you know, the person that is here, quote unquote, for our safety.
Right.
Is the person that mm-hmm. is.
Threatening
people
or safety.
Off. Yeah, yeah. And I like if the note is something like really tiny, where like the defendant just or the like Jodie Foster just gave someone a nickname or something, and yeah. then he calls someone
right,
that nickname, and she's like, I never called them by their name. He can see my notes.
Right. What's how would
great,
he know?
What's great about that too is they can be wondering like for a while like how they got the witness's name, and maybe they read the name on like the person's paperwork mm-hmm. while they were, you know, in the court, but there are other ways, like they could have hacked into their files, mm-hmm. they could have gone to the office.
Yeah.
But this is the detail that like,
yeah.
you know, we just make it a point that it's clear they wrote that note in the room, like mm-hmm. during a moment that were, you know, and it got immediately thrown in the garbage, and there's no way this person would have like, you know, read it unless it was
totally.
In the courtroom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or there's even some sort of thing that, like, you know, the defense attorney can have a moment with their significant other of like, you know me, I'm always forgetting people's names. So I need to give everyone kind of like little mnemonic
yeah.
devices
yeah.
to help me remember their name. And so, you know, so like this guy is like Double Diego, Double Diego, Double Diego. Here, I'm going to write it down, Double Diego. And then like, you know, and it's like one of those like only she would have like, you know, or had that particular way of referring to
yeah.
this person.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man. I guess this has to take place. This has to sort of like feel like a normal trial movie for a little bit before it takes a turn. Or do we think that it can take place kind of like in a contained sort of like...
Sorry. What? I just like the idea of like whoever the original person was on trial, like halfway through being like, hi. And everyone's like, ah, shut up.
Get
up.
We don't care.
We have bigger things yeah. to worry about now.
And that's what even with this case, it could be something as it could be like a parking infraction, like something not that big of a deal where even the jurors are like, I can't believe
yeah,
I have jury
right.
duty for this really mundane, boring yeah. case. And then it becomes
well,
the most hype.
It has to justify like the amount of effort that young Jodie Foster is putting into it or mm-hmm. maybe
also,
not. It could that could also be like a commentary on this defense attorney.
I'm more worried about like the amount of effort that the sheriff is putting in.
Sure.
Like, are they just like that concerned about having like their perfect record of like well, everyone is convicted?
I think
up for
to make,
election.
To make it even worse, it could be yeah.
Law
it could be that
candidate.
It could be that or it could be like I don't know, the original crime like seems mundane, but actually the sheriff did something worse.
Yeah.
Oh sure.
That it's hiding.
Or flip it around and like it's like it's a case about like abuse of power
mm-hmm.
and then the sheriff is the defense and Jodie Foster is the prosecution or something like that.
Mm.
I don't know.
Something where the like the stakes of the original case like seem not as intense.
Sure.
But then you find out that the reason that the sheriff didn't want the defense to win is because it might have unearthed
something.
Like that can
right.
be
no,
the
like
second
something
bigger
that the,
reveal.
Something that the key witness would have said would have implicated like an abuse of power
right.
or something of the sheriff's.
Mm-hmm.
And would have opened like a can of worms that then when it was, you know, in the court record, reporters and civil rights attorneys and all of those would have just like been after him.
Mm-hmm. 5 minutes.
Okay, but like I all feel right. that like we've got something pretty good going on because
yeah.
it's like you start watching it and you're like, oh, all right, it's like a small time court or a small town court movie. This will mm-hmm. be fun because it's like all these people that kind of know each other,
right?
And then it's plot twist,
right?
The star surprise witness gets murdered, and now mm-hmm. you know we're kind of having first this battle of wills about, like, are we going to handle this by sending everybody home? No, 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 no. I insist that we all kind of stay here. And then it's kind of like one by one talking to everyone and being like, ah, shit, the dead guy had beef with John. And, like, you know, he'd, like, broken up with, like, Marilyn, like, 3 months ago. And, like, he'd done that and this and that.
Right.
And all these people, they're all kind of like, who do we trust? Who do we not? Thank God the sheriff is here, though. Mm-hmm. Like, man, like, it's so good to know that, like, you know, the sheriff is here to keep us all safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point, there's kind of like the turn where... Yeah. They realize that something is up with the camera, or the sheriff says something about
something
that he couldn't know.
Really abrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that whoever plays the sheriff has to be one of those actors that's like only ever cast as a good guy.
Mm.
Like,
oh, totally.
Like Harrison Ford, his most villainous role is like the mean person from American Graffiti in the truck. Like everything else, he's been a good.
Yeah.
So it has to be, the casting has to be very particular to be like someone that no one would ever suspect that the sheriff's a bad guy. So that the moviegoer puts so much trust into them. Like a Tom Cruise.
No.
Like it's something young, where you're like, the sheriff has to be good. It's Tom Cruise.
Young Jodie Foster with current age Tom Hanks.
Oh,
That's what it can be, yeah.
Oh, man.
No, but I love that idea of kind of like, you're just like, of course. Like,
yeah.
I trust them implicitly. It's them. They're always great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or like, if we're doing 90s Jodie Foster, we could also do 90s John Cusack.
Oh, sure. Right, because he's kind of developed an edge since then.
Since then,
he was like always just like the straight nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else we want to have going on with our heroic lawyer? I forget if we've made Jodie Foster a defense attorney or a prosecutor, but
I think it can be either.
Yeah.
Or.
Yeah, I think it can be either. But like our protagonist is there anything else that she's trying to work through? Is there anything else that like the experience of the trial will help her connect with a significant other or like? Become more of a part of the small town that she sort of feels a little elite for or whatever.
Yeah, like that is the first thing that hops to mind of she got assigned to this like little podunk town.
Right.
She's the one person that doesn't know anyone yet. Like she's a very, very good lawyer.
Right.
But she doesn't know. She hasn't grown up there. She's not a member of the community. She's been there like 6 months and still doesn't know anybody by name.
And that might lead to everyone in the town inherently not trusting her over the sheriff because she's only been there for 5 months or whatever.
Right.
Or even she could even be if this is in the San Juan Islands of Washington or if it's in more of a rural redneckier type town. If she's from like Boston and went to MIT or Yale or whatever, Harvard, like she went to some preppy school and they like inherently don't trust that type of person.
Right.
So can make an extra hurdle for her is when she's trying to first off going against this sheriff that everybody loves.
Yeah.
But second, then trying to try to keep the peace where she's the only person that wouldn't be trusted in this town. So maybe that even makes them kind of doubt her at first because maybe it's her first big case and they're like, you know, something where they're trying to make her look
good luck
bad.
With that Yale, you know? Like,
Yeah. Exactly. So I like that.
I dig that. Yeah.
Man, that might be like the sheriff's desperation move of trying to turn the town against her.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, for sure.
That should happen.
Right.
I think that could be the big thing. And especially if it's like looking really close, like he plants some sort of evidence on her or something.
Yeah.
And it's really looking like she's guilty for doing it. She had some sort of reason.
No, and it's like, oh, I see how, like, it's real convenient. Like, you had this one big witness and nobody knew what they were going to say.
And that could even
and
be.
And they just happened to drop dead. And now we got to have a mistrial, which will give you more time to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Something where, like, it implicates her. Like, even if her and the sheriff are on the same side.
Yeah.
And then the murder makes it look as if. It, like what the sheriff was kind of trying, what in our original idea of the sheriff was trying to do, like it could be something where murdering the witness would make her side of the case look better and be like, oh, that witness would have had you on the case. But then instead of covering up the crime, it covers up whatever the sheriff had done before, which is like completely unrelated. And that's how the sheriff is able to place the blame is because like maybe she's the prosecutor and the sheriff is the one who arrested whoever.
Right.
So it looks
and
like
they should be on the same side,
but
they don't get along. And she's like the one person who thinks this guy's an asshole.
And that's
Nice.
I'm very all proud right, of how far right. that got.
I feel good. Yes.
I feel good about that.
Booked. This is beautiful.
I feel great.
Well, thank you for bringing it to us, Zach.
My yeah. pleasure. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Reddit for something.
Which subreddit was this on?
That is a very good question.
Okay.
I'll have to.
I can see being on Today Island.
To put the hazmat suit back on and go back in. And let you know. Well, we'll be back after these messages.
All right, you lovely, lovely listeners. We're going to be right back to the show in just a moment. But before we do that, we have a very quick announcement to make. Although it is an exciting Indeed. Announcement. It's one that we are feeling psyched about. And that is that so many of you guys have signed up for our Patreon campaign. We've been feeling all of the love and all of the support for us
thank
making
you, thank you, thank
this
you.
Show. And we're actually only $60 per episode away from our next goal. And it's a goal that we're super, super, super times a lot super excited about.
Yeah. No, if we hit $150 per episode of No Bad Ideas on Patreon, we will actually take one of the ideas that we talk about in the game section of this show, and we will turn it into an honest to goodness, fully fleshed out No Bad Ideas script, which
no
will
way.
Hopefully be a good idea.
It's going to be insane.
So yes, if you would like to inflict all of that on us, you can head over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support, and that'll take you to our Patreon page. Again, that is nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
And there you'll be able to sign up for awesome rewards to help us meet this stretch goal. At $1, you get a bonus back half where we answer a question from one of you lovely patrons. And then at $3, you could even get basically a full mini episode of this show every single week with not only the bonus back half, but also a blitz edition of the game we play in the first half where we have just 5 minutes to cobble together the best idea we can for a terrible idea from the internet.
And if just enough people sign up to give us $60 more per episode, that's $60. That's nothing. That's like a nice meal for two at a restaurant. Then we're going to get cracking on writing a script. At that level, we'll put up for a vote some of our favorite ideas, and you guys will get to choose which one we'll be subjected to. And we'll get started on writing the first 15 pages of the script, and we'll be publishing that shortly thereafter. So, if you want to help us make all of that happen, head on over to our Patreon, and we'll see you back here for more No Bad Ideas.
That's one more time, nobadideaspodcast.com/support. nobadideaspodcast.com/support.
Thank you, guys.
So lovely to be here for the back half of the show, which, if you haven't been here before, is a much looser, less structured conversation than the game portion, where we talk about life and being creative and
just check in.
Yeah.
Although this week, we're also going to talk about a bad idea
oh, yeah.
of the show, because while we were setting up, Mike told us something that he does that I think earned 3 double takes from everyone else in the room when we were all
nothing
like,
short of a gem.
Both yeah. horror and appreciation, like mixed together.
Right.
And those 6 takes were directed at the dramatic revelation that...
Yeah, so I work on 2 podcasts and I need to do a lot of work for those. I also have a full-time job. So any moment that I am not at my job or doing something else, I'm editing Potterless. And that includes when I'm commuting on public transit. So when I'm on the subway, I almost always have my backpack on me, which has my laptop in it. And even if it's like a 10-minute subway ride, if I can find a seat on the subway, I'll find a seat. I'll bring out my laptop. I will open it up, edit for the little time that I can. And then once I hear the person be like, this is Wheeler. And then I'm like, oh, this, I got to right. get off here. Right. And then I'll put it away and then leave. Now, this is a bad idea for many reasons. First off, someone, if anything like happens on the train where someone like falls a weird way, or if someone's yep. drunk on the train and like kicks my laptop out, it could break. Someone could try to do the thing, which I don't know if you've ever seen these videos where people will stand right by the door. And if someone's like on the phone, like they'll wait till it's like door is closing. And then they grab the phone and they jump off.
Yeah.
So I always do try to avoid sitting next to the doors. Cause like that I think is like the biggest risk of all this.
New York City famous for its, subway dancers who often right. do shows.
Showtime, that, ladies and gentlemen. And then, yeah, guy backflips and kicks my,
right, kicks my your screen
laptop
out.
All the way.
Right.
But then the last thing is like the actual like real dangerous thing would be if someone sees me put a laptop into my backpack and then get off of that stop. And then they decide I want to steal this kid's backpack and get a laptop.
Yeah.
So I always have to make sure that no one's following me. Now, I do really try to keep my wits about me and make sure that no one's there. And it's nice in that like 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, like
it
that
adds up.
Adds up so that right. I'm not like Sunday night pulling an all nighter to get my episode of Potterless up.
See, that's my power move. That's what I do.
I'm just
the Sunday night all nighter.
I'm so, I just feel like it's almost like being hungover where you just like waste the next day. Mm-hmm. If I can't get more than 4.5 hours of sleep, I'm just like a shell of myself the next day where it's like the productivity gained is like lost immediately.
Sure.
Yep.
So
right.
by trying to do little bits here and there, I try to avoid that happening. But still, as much editing as I do in a public setting where people can try to steal or hurt my thing, it's a bad idea. But it works for me.
I mean, if it works for you, I know that like if I did that, I would just miss stops constantly. I would end up in Outer Boroughs all the time.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It would take more trips to Coney Island.
Right.
Which, hey, I've never been to Coney Island. So
I am lucky in that most of the trains I take, since I live in Manhattan and work in Long Island City, I'm not going that far away. And most of right. the trains are the newer ones that have the digital screens that not only tell you the stops, but then there's the big ones that say next stop.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
those are better. But every time I get on like an old D train that doesn't have, it's just nope. the like pasted signs with no lights or anything, I'm like, what?
Yeah, know, right.
That's where I could see running into that issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. The joy of living on the 1-2-3.
The thing that amazes me is, like, Zach, you sometimes do writing on the subway.
Yeah, you I have do. Your.
I was gonna say,
you're alpha smart.
Yeah, I for mostly, you know, theft related concerns, don't want to break out my like editing computer on the subways in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's like woefully like old and like the storage is full, so I need a drive, and then the second yeah. you're dealing with that, it's like a mess. But
I have a very thin MacBook Pro, which is
awesome.
Very nice, like folded up, it's like as thick as my phone in a case is. Oh, so that
awesome.
Is a major factor.
Yeah.
But I do, since inheriting my grandmother's old Chromebook, use that. And before that, I had built this crazy like Frankenstein keyboard monster that I use as a notebook, and I find writing in the subway to be my most productive writing time, pretty much.
Interesting.
I think something about being locked in
sure.
and something about like being like, yeah, just there's no place to go. It's,
right.
It's not like I'm going to have a steady internet connection unless I'm on the J train above ground.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And then something about just being surrounded by people is like, helps me focus or stay
yeah,
focused.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I do some of my best Potterless editing, not in terms of sound quality, because I can't hear like every little thing.
That was going to be my question of like, do you ever run into problems of not being able to hear
it's,
clearly
It's usually
enough?
Not that bad. I mean, I have like little earbuds that are pretty solid about noise canceling.
Oh, nice.
So I can at least do it. Also, Potterless editing is for the most part just people talking and getting rid of likes and ums and timing.
Yeah, so you can just read
up.
The waveforms, really.
Right. So visual really helps a lot. And then it's just going back. And then worst case, if it's something that I'm not sure about sounding right, I'll just screenshot whatever time stamp it's at and then go back to it when I'm home.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think just like by not having solid internet connection, I'm not tempted to be editing for a little bit and be like, I'm going to check Twitter,
which is my
downfall. And then I go into a 5-hour long YouTube thing where I'm, you know,
right,
watching Spiral of whatever.
So
I think like being surrounded by people, same thing. I'm not tempted to look at anything personal on my computer because I don't want people like see
sure.
what's there. So people just see waveforms and won't look at me. And then, yeah, like you're just like, I'm locked in. I know that it's 20 minutes until my next stop. I know, just work on this thing for 20 minutes and go.
Yeah.
And that I think is really helpful. It's something that like I'm trying to do. There's like this focus study called The Cave, where you basically set aside a time where you're like, okay, for 30 minutes, I'm just going to do something and not do anything else, mm-hmm. and just like go and do your thing. And it's a nice thing, which is, it was like, they came into my office and like taught us how to focus better, because we're in a big open floor plan office where it can be very distracting. So they were teaching us the concept of like The Cave, where for 30 minutes, you're just like, I'm only doing this thing and I'm not going to do anything else or be distracted or whatever. And you can be more productive. It's great, but it's also a lot easier to put yourself in a soft cave rather than a hard cave like the subway is, where you're like, I don't have internet, I don't, you know, have anything else that I can do, I need to just do this thing I'm working on. So yeah, I feel you.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm curious if you've found any other sort of, I hesitate to say hacks, but just sort of working discoveries that work for you and make your creativity more sustainable.
Just like little things that might seem more obscure that like in my process make it easier for me,
or... Yeah, like, I guess, is there anything other than subway editing that is in your sort of repertoire as a person who manages a full-time job with two side podcasts and like a growing business?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think it's just one thing that's helped me. Again, this is also from that work thing that came in. One thing that helped me is, I forget, I've been talking about this a lot, but it's like a really good thing. I think more people should do it. I don't know the name of the concept, but it's something where you just like, you set a goal of a daily thing to do that is like personal, like on purpose, purposefully very easy to achieve. And you know you can do it. So for example, Potter is like, the Patreon has grown very large, which is amazing, but I have a lot of stickers and t-shirts to mail out, which is very time consuming. And I keep telling myself like, I'm going to have a Saturday where I do a million of them. And then I never do it, because that Saturday I always have to like edit my podcast, which is due Monday and is more pressing, etc.
Right.
So I've started to set a goal for myself where it's like every day, no matter what, you're just going to send 5 envelopes of stickers out to people. And that like, that'll take maybe 15 minutes total. And I could do a lot more. And if I have a day where I knock a bunch out, I do more than that. But if I'm consistently just like, you have to do 5 before you go to bed, whatever. If I do 5 a day, that's better than not doing any during the week and then doing 35 on a Saturday.
You know? Totally.
Right. So that's been like a little thing that I've started to do now, which has really helped, especially just with like avoiding those things that you keep putting off. It's another thing is just like trying to not let anything sit for more than a week. Right. Like if you think you're going to do a thing, like just giving yourself some sort of hard deadline would be like, I kept telling myself I'm going to do this thing for my taxes or whatever, but that was a week ago. It's like, no, for a week you have to do it. So I think that's just like putting, it's, I think what it all boils down to is that when you're trying to run stuff, especially on your own, and you don't have hard deadlines and things can be kind of more fluid, you have to like give yourself little rules that you have to follow and then just like stick to them for the sake of sticking to them.
Totally.
And I think that's just like been a better way for me to be on top of my time, because it wasn't as much of a concern before Potteros went weekly, and now Potteros is weekly and I don't have the luxury of being like, oh, I'm just going to like watch Netflix tonight. Like I can't have any of those nights anymore. So you just have to be like very particular about your time. But yeah, editing in little tiny places allows that to be less stressful for me. So yeah.
No, I definitely remember the last, I want to say 5 months of Wolf 359, the kind of big show that we did before we were doing this show. We got to a point where we had enough support on Patreon that we were then like, all right, like, you know, every other episode a full, or every other week a full episode, and then all our off weeks mini episodes, which of course we were like, oh, they're gonna be super fast, they're gonna all be like 5 minutes.
Of course.
I don't think a single one came in under 11 minutes.
Oh,
because
never.
we are incapable of
brevity.
But at that point is when, while I was definitely cracked out from not getting enough sleep when we were on a weekly upload schedule, I also weirdly feel that it was in some ways a very functional period of my life, because all of a sudden I kind of had these like very, very solid, unmoving deadlines that were just kind of like, okay, no, you need to hit this.
Yeah.
And that kind of forces you to be on top of your shit every other day of the week. in order to be able to have time on Sunday to edit the mini episode that needs to go out that week.
Yeah.
It's so funny when other people expect something from you, how that gets done in a way that, like, when you're just like, oh, I can do a bunch of things and I'll feel good about myself on a Saturday. No, never. Right. Never happens.
Never, ever.
Yeah.
Right. This is the fear of public shame sort of productivity hack of tell a bunch of people that you would be embarrassed to fail that you're going to do something when you really want to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, and I think that, like, we would all do... I think that, like, the week needs to be one day longer. And, like, on that one extra day, that is the day that we would wake up early and we would be refreshed and we would all have, like, these, all the things that we've been putting off all week, those would all happen on Sillion Day or whatever we would call it.
Right. Ask the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish there was, and this, thankfully, hopefully, will become something of the past when I can do podcasting full time and don't have to worry about it. Because like you're saying with the weekly thing, it's going to be so good when I... can afford to, like, quit a full-time job, because then I'll still have this, like, crazy, like, work ethic schedule, whatever it is. And then it's like, oh, but I also have just gained 10 hours every day to do other things. But I think that in like a normal work setting, I like something that I have lost in that my new job is much more time intensive. In my old job, I had the luxury of being like, even if I wasn't always doing stuff for work, if I was doing something like for my personal life productive that still was like related to work, I felt okay. So like if I spent an hour in my old job working on something with like my taxes or with my like health benefits for the work, like if I did something like that, I was like, that's okay. Like, yes, I wasn't doing work for an hour, but it was still like something that's important and tangentially related to work. In my new job, like I don't have that luxury. And those things have just like gone by the wayside. And I feel like there should be in a normal, who like if someone has a normal Monday to Friday job, like maybe even if it's just like one day a month or like one day every other week, where they can be like, hey, on this Wednesday, I'm like still getting paid or whatever, but I'm not doing work stuff. I'm just like finally going to the locksmith or like finally doing laundry or you get one day where you're allowed to just be like, hi, I promise everything I'm doing today is productive for me as a human. And I know it's not exactly related to my job, but like, these are all things I need for my own personal sanity. So you just have a day where like, it's acceptable for you to just like do a kind of all this sort of stuff. Like, let me go to the bank, cash these checks, go to the post office, refill my prescription, get a doctor's appointment, like all these sort of things. Right. Like that should be allowed, where like you can use this card once every 2 weeks and be like, hi.
Mental health days for that.
Yeah.
I've just like called it a mental health day, but like really it is, you know, basically just I take care of my other things that aren't the work.
Which I think has a huge impact on mental health.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
My stomach just did a backflip when you mentioned locksmith, because I've been needing to get like an extra set of keys of my house made for like 4 months, and it's still, and it just like has not happened.
Yeah.
So that was very much kind of like, oh yeah, right. I need to do that. Oh,
we all have those things that we've been sitting on forever.
Yeah. I gotta get my shoes fixed.
Yeah. There's so many things. I'm sure everyone is now thinking of all of them.
Yeah. I just got shoes back from the cobbler. It took like 6 months to get them there.
Yeah. So that would be nice to have if we could just like a little like, I'm sorry, please let me catch up on all these things I've been procrastinating card would be really helpful in life.
For sure.
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, that sometimes you sort of have to, or at least for me, like it helps to like make a conscious choice, like the, you know, sort of as we've been sort of heads down editing something, and it's kind of been like every day go to Zach's and do editing, and then go home and do work. I'm just like, you know what? For these 2 weeks, the gym is not my problem. Like this thing that I usually would feel bad about and like, you know, feels like I should be taken care of.
Right.
No. And so just sort of like toggling through, and like as of this week, the gym is my problem again because it's February. But like, but like, you know, I'm you know, not as worried about tax stuff. That's March Sarah's problem. Like,
right.
And just sort of trying to triage it as best you can. It would be wonderful if we could have passes or days. But if, you know, if you're in a circumstance where you for whatever reason can't do that, I feel like just rotating priorities as opposed to like deciding to let go of some completely could be helpful.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I also think something that helps is I liked your thought of like March Sarah, February Sarah, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I try to do a lot of things that help out future Mike a bunch, and some things are really clutch. Even when it's like being proactive, like you don't know of a certain thing that's going to go wrong, but you know something's going to go wrong. Yeah. So like I've always been a big fan of like on Sunday night cooking a big thing of something, like big pot of chili, big thing of curry, bunch of chicken, whatever it is, and they're just having a bunch of Tupperware food. And just like, maybe I have the time to cook all these other nights, but there's going to be one day of the week where something's going to go wrong and Future Mike is going to be like, oh, thank God, all I got to do for dinner is throw something in the microwave totally. And eat it. Like
yeah.
those little things. Or like yesterday, I was like really tired and just out of it, and I had enough laundry. I was like, I don't think I have the mental brain space to like knock out a bunch of Potterless editing or read a bunch of Harry Potter, take all the notes and stuff. But like I have enough to do a whole bunch of laundry. Whereas like Future Mike, who like is going to need socks Poor and guy. Underwear at yeah. some yeah. point. Like, I should do this for him now so that on Sunday night when he's like stressing to get it out, you know, he's got one less thing to worry about. So I think like trying to, even if it's not pressing, something that can be helpful is like trying to think of stuff that can set you up for future success, especially on those days where you're just like not feeling it in whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
Like if you're having a writer's block or something, you're like, I could like bang my head against the wall and for 4 hours get like 1 hour's worth of work done. Instead, let me do something that is going to make life better for when I am in the groove and I'm in the zone and I'm killing it and I don't want to take a step away to clean or do this other thing that like is due. Let me go ahead. So I think that's like a good thing to keep in mind.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I definitely agree. I find that one of the most useful things I can do when I'm busy is stop working and just make this room like maybe not immaculate, but like right. as close as it needs to be to mm-hmm. be, you know, to have the room to focus.
Oh yeah.
Stress cleaning is definitely it's a great thing in my uh-huh. life.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And using that cleaning time to be productive. Like you can do something at the same time of cleaning, or if there is something that you find to be distracting, like if you know there's a new documentary out and you really want to watch it but you don't want to just like delete 2 hours, be like, okay, how about I do laundry, like fold my clothes yeah. at the same time, because like then yeah. you can, rather than just being like, I'm going to set aside 2 hours to watch this documentary, now it's like, well, it maybe took me 3 hours but I did laundry and watched a documentary at the same time, rather than 2 hours of just watching the documentary and then 2 hours of just doing laundry. I've saved an hour. So like
totally.
You can, it doesn't just have to be the hybridization of productive things. It can be like this one thing you've wanted to do, but rather than feel guilty about just watching the new Ted Bundy thing on Netflix,
right.
I'm also going to clean my room every minute that I'm watching this, so that like
totally.
I'm treating myself, but also treating myself in this thing I keep putting off.
Although yeah. I'm guilty of being like doing that in name, and then in reality, I'm just watching TV. And like, especially with exercise, like, oh yeah, I'm going to work out and watch this Netflix show. And then, like, ooh, that was one hard rep.
yeah. I think for me, there's also just like something to be said for like, in those moments of like, I'm really worried, I'm going to tear into this room and clean it up. Or like, you know, I'm going to like do laundry and do like angry laundry. And like, yeah. I remember like always like doing that and just kind of like afterwards being like, oh, I feel so much better now. At a certain point, somebody in my life made the observation of like, yes, because you let yourself be stressed. Like you let your body metabolize the chemical thing that was happening inside your brain, at least a little bit, instead of kind of being like, ah, go away, stress. I can't feel you right now.
Which I we all know is the most effective way
to deal with emotions, is to just kind of be like, I'm not going to feel you right now. I'm going to ignore you. And then you'll go away without any repercussions.
Internalize. Yeah.
So yeah, so I think that is also something that like I have realized is like something to take into account for these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So I think that is going to be it for this episode of No Bad Ideas, or at least it will be it after we do one more thing, which is effusively thank Mike for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh no, we were
so wonderful.
Absolutely lucky ones.
In the studio.
Mike, what are you working on? Is there anything that you want to plug? Anything you want to tell us about your many, many shows?
Yeah, I mean, talked about Horse at the top of the show, so I'll go a little more into Potterless, which I referenced a lot. But yeah, it's me reading the Harry Potter series for the very first time. never read them as a kid, so I'm reading them as an adult. My guests are always Harry Potter experts, so these three lovely humans in the room with me have all been those experts. It's a super fun time. At the time of recording, reading-wise, they just got out of Gringotts Bank from the dragon,
which
is super cool. Episode-wise, like, I'm a little bit behind it. I just posted from the beginning of book 7. So right now I'm doing the books. When the books are done, I'll do the movies. When I'm done with the movies, I'll do like all the spin-off stuff that JK did. Then I'll do like all the fan stuff that's popular. So like a Harry Potter musical or Puffs or all that kind of stuff.
Amazing.
And then afterwards, I'm just doing anything that's got a Harry Potter logo thrown on it that is officially licensed. So the Quidditch PlayStation 2 video game or whatever may fall with the Lego Harry Potter games, like anything that's got a Harry Potter sticker on it, I'll touch.
Cool.
But that's awesome. So it's been really fun. It's been a good time, and just working on that and Horace has been a dream, and hopefully it'll be me just doing that full time, which is the real dream. But yeah, if you want to find any of those, just search for Potterless or Horse on any, you know, podcasting stuff or Spotify or social media, whatever it is. Search functions are good enough where if you search for those words, they'll show up. But yeah, and then I'm at Shube17 on everything if you want to find just me.
Amazing.
Outstanding.
Hell yeah. Future.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.